Welcome to the Medical Travel Show with your hosts, Elizabeth Zayemba and Irving Stackpole.
Welcome to the Medical Travel Show, a series of conversations with industry thought leaders sharing ideas while exploring the challenges and benefits of global healthcare services. This is Irving Stackpole, and I'm here today with my co-host, Elizabeth Zayemba.
Thank you very much, Irving. It's great to be back here in the studio where we have a terrific guest joining us today, Dr. Sophie Chung. Dr. Sophie Chung is the CEO and founder of Cuno Medical, a digital health platform that provides patients with access to high-quality, affordable healthcare worldwide. After earning her MD degree from Medical University of Vienna, Sophie gained firsthand experience in treating patients as a doctor in Australia and providing access to healthcare while working at a non-governmental organization in Cambodia. Prior to founding Cuno Medical in 2015, Sophie worked at a digital health startup, ZocDoc, in New York, and for McKinsey & Company in Berlin. Dr. Chung is a successful entrepreneur who has built Cuno Medical into a valuable resource for patients seeking access to high-quality doctors around the world. Welcome to the Medical Travel Show, Sophie.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the very thorough introduction.
Well, thank you for joining us, Sophie, and welcome to the show. With such an extraordinary background, how did you first become interested in international medical travel?
That's actually a good question, and it's really interesting because I have to admit, at first, I was not interested in international medical travel. I was always interested in how to help patients find the right doctor and the right care for themselves. And what I saw during my research was that a lot of patients would face limitations within their local healthcare system because of shortage of doctor supply or financial reasons or all of that. And my question was always, what do you do then as a patient if you are limited in your healthcare choice because of where you live? And this is how I got to the medical travel space, because when I asked that question, nobody really could give me a good answer. And the next answer that would make sense to me was, well, you got to look outside of where you live or what your healthcare system is. And that ultimately led me to the topic of medical travel.
Well, certainly access is a critical issue, access to the needed care. Do you see a future where consumers are fully engaged and will be accessing care across borders on a routine and regular basis?
I do indeed think so. And I do think that there is a movement going on right now, especially with the modernization and digitalization of healthcare and of our everyday life. And I think many other sectors have shown how the world is getting closer, and that kind of country borders and boundaries are being broken up. And I do think that the next step, because healthcare is such an important topic, and people are increasingly being empowered by the increasing transparency of information on the internet, that country borders and city borders and system borders are going to matter less as we grow into the future.
Certainly, the international medical travel sector has started out by consumers and consumer demand and consumers accessing information and sort of pushing healthcare providers to offer them additional choice. Around the world, employers and insurance companies are beginning to engage more in this sector. But really, in terms of creating global demand, it seems like we are going to have to go beyond consumers and engage more seriously with governments, insurance companies, and private sector. So what roles do you see for them in helping to grow the international medical travel industry?
Yeah, well, I do. I very much agree with what you just said. Indeed, the dissatisfaction about local healthcare systems led to the formation of this unique patient-driven global movement, which is very interesting to look. Usually, when you look at how innovation is being driven, or how new things are entering the market, it's actually, you know, somebody is creating a product and then they sell it to the people, basically. And in medical travel, it's the other way around. There was a grassroots movement of demand before there was supply, and only thereafter, as you said, doctors are starting to react to this, and this market started to grow, which makes it very fascinating to me to look at it from a systemic level. But also, indeed, healthcare is a space where insurance providers, where regulatory offices, governments are deeply involved in how the systems work. And I think, you know, for somebody like us who are trying to really bring innovation to the market, I do think that governments and regulatory systems and insurance companies will have to start thinking about their position in that market and what kind of role they want to play there. I think right now they're starting to realize that there is this movement and which they cannot look away, and the demand is rising. I don't think they have a good answer for themselves at this moment.
Well, it's certainly, if history serves, and I think it does here, the technology and the market designs of markets, especially in where technology plays a role. And as you said, I think very insightfully, that the internet plays a huge role here, that the governments are desperately trying to keep up. And sometimes they're just, the changes are blowing right past them and they can barely figure out how to keep up. Just look at the issue of cross-border taxation for products and services. Even that, the government is missing the boat significantly. So these intermediaries, the governments, they certainly play an important role in healthcare, because as much as we try to engage consumers and educate consumers, there's still an imbalance in the information between the consumer and the medical professionals. So we're always going to need, I think, maybe you disagree, Dr. Chung, but I think we may always need some intermediary between the consumer, the patient, and the provider, the doctor, the hospital, the healthcare professional. And how can we recruit? What's the smart strategy for recruiting these intermediaries into accepting or beginning to adopt medical travel?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I agree with you to a certain extent. However, I'd like to say that, so I agree with you that there will always be some sort of intermediary position between the patient and the healthcare provider of some sort. I don't think, however, that this will be the government, because as you pointed out very correctly, is that governments tend to be very reluctant to be on the innovation front. And usually they are the followers of innovation, of what is going on, because they're just frankly moving too slow in order to adapt to it. And that's where I think the topic of technology comes in. And I think the opportunity has never been larger than now to use technology to have this intermediary position between the patient and the doctors, for the healthcare providers, and balance out the disbalance of information availability from one side to the other side. I think, you know, when you think 20 years back, all the information was on the side of the healthcare providers, insurance companies. Patients had no chance to do their research, getting insight into data and all of that. Today, we're moving into the exact that direction, where patients are starting to demand that sort of information transparency, where they are not willing to put up with the lack of information anymore. And I think technology is going to be a great enabler in order to do so. And that's why I think, you know, digitalization in healthcare, especially also what we're doing at Kino Medical, where we really try to combine smart technology and human sensitivity, I do think that's the path for the future.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. I think the personalization, the democratization of my healthcare data at a personal level will be significant. It reminds me of Dr. Topol's book, The Patient Will See You Now, and that this shift is beginning to appear in all kinds of ways here in the U.S. and in the U.K. around things like telehealth and telesolutions. So in a sense, the technology of which you are a very well-informed and passionate advocate, this technology is replacing the intermediation. It's replacing the third-party administrator, replacing the insurance company, and the consumers will use the technology go to directly to the providers.
Yep, I think that's absolutely right. And you know, the nice thing about thinking about technology as an enabler, especially on the patient side, I think, is a wonderful thought, because even, you know, back in times where insurance companies or providers or government and positions have tried to be the intermediary, I think there's always a conflict of interest, especially when, you know, when kind of the spending part and the consumer part, the patient and the health insurances have to work together. And I think that's what technology is going to resolve. Technology can be built to be neutral, or in the best case, even on the patient side, which, you know, has been a large disbalance until now. And I really like the way how you put it, and using the term democratization of data. I think it's democratization of data, but at the same time, also the empowerment of the patient. All of a sudden, patients nowadays, they realize that they have a choice and they have a say. Like 20 years back, you know, when your GP would tell you, you know, you go to this hospital next door, people would follow that advice and would never even, you know, think of questioning that advice or recommendation from the local doctor. But today, we see this all the time at Chemo Medical, where patients call us up and say, is that the right doctor? Is that a good doctor? Is there any other option I have? And I'm willing to, you know, look for alternative options outside of my local healthcare system. I'm willing to travel somewhere else as long as I know that this is going to be better for me. And I think that's going to be a wonderful movement where patients all of a sudden are in the position to have a choice and are empowered to navigate the healthcare system by themselves and on their own.
You've certainly touched on an important point about the conflict of interest within the delivery of healthcare to patients, which have often sidelined the patients so that their interests become secondary or tertiary or almost forgotten in the equation of those delivery of services. So that brings to mind the question of quality and how we can educate consumers, or how a system can provide quality of services that can be measured across boundaries, because quality in one country or even in one provider within a country is different from quality across borders or even within those same borders. So from your perspective and how CUNO Medical deals with this issue, how do you define quality and define it for consumers?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, you know, the topic of quality in healthcare has been something a lot of smart brains have been thinking about for a long time. And I think, you know, especially when it comes to healthcare, quality has different meanings and different layers of quality. And kind of the attempt to define kind of quality as this one single definition, what it means to everyone in a generalized way in healthcare, I think that's almost impossible. So what we do at CUNO Medical is we look at different layers of quality. And depending on who the patient is and what the underlying disease or treatment is, quality can have different meanings. So, for example, there is something that is a very factual-driven data point which we can measure in terms of quality is the disease, is the problem basically solved after the patient went for treatment. And it's a binary thing where you say it's yes or no, you can measure this really fast. However, as we all know in healthcare, it's hardly ever that binary. So what do you do then? Quality can be compliance, right? A doctor who can get a patient to be compliant in his behavior and taking medication. This would be a really great quality indicator for physician quality, because the doctor who is most successful is the one who is most successfully treating and getting patients to be compliant, for example. So compliance could be a quality indicator. The other thing is quality indicator as a perception indicator from a patient. I don't need to measure quality if I can ask the patient, did you feel that you were getting better after you've seen the doctor or after the treatment, or did you think you're happier now? And you know, if the answer is yes, coming from the patient, what more do you want? So I think there are different layers of quality, and really depending on what the need is and what you're trying to achieve, we have to look at it from different angles. That does not mean, though, that it's not a data-driven approach. You can measure this for each of the examples I just mentioned. I think we just need to put it into the right context every time we talk about quality.
That's a very politic and a very an excellent answer. As a data scientist, I like to say that if you can't measure it, it doesn't matter. But indeed, there's quite a subtle. So, Dr. Chung, you've been involved with two healthcare startups in this domain, ZocDoc and Cuno Medical, and you've lived to survive, and you're being interviewed on this day in September 2018. There have been so many failures in this, in these markets, in these international medical travel markets. So many people have attempted to do what you have apparently done successfully, and without giving solace to the competition, can you offer us some insights as to how you've managed to do that?
Good question. I think, you know, what makes us very different from many other companies out there, and I don't say this lightly, but I do say this with pride, is that we are putting patients' interests first before anything else. And I do think that, you know, a lot of other companies are putting their financial interests or their economic interests first. And I think, you know, when you do that, it's a very short-lived experience, and the product and the service that you're offering is not going to be a sustainable offering, because your consumers, basically your patients, will know and will feel it that their interests are not the most important factor in the service that they are using. So at Cuno Medical, for example, and it was the same at ZocDoc, to be honest, this is where I learned this passion for patient empowerment, is that without any excuse and without any question, the highest value of our company is patient first. And we don't only write this onto a poster and hang it up the wall and pretend this is it. We really use it in our day-to-day work. And oftentimes, you know, even at Cuno Medical, we get into a conflict of interest because, you know, we on the one side work with patients, but on the other side, we work with a lot of doctors, fabulous doctors and great hospital providers, because this is where our patients will choose to go. And so oftentimes my teams come up to me and they want to do things that would benefit the doctors and the hospital providers and the health insurance companies that we work with. And my challenging question is always to say, how is this patient first? And if there is no good answer that my team can give me in terms of how this is going to make our patient's life better, we're not going to do it for now, because we're still in a phase of a company where we have to rigorously prioritize our resources in order to sustainably grow and bring the benefits of our service into the world. So we cannot do everything at the same time. So this rigorous prioritization for patients and to benefit them in the first place, I think that makes the biggest difference. And also when you look at other industries, you know, companies who are most successful are the ones who have always put the customer's interest first before anything else. And I think that is the largest difference between companies who are successful and the ones who are not.
What a terrific answer. And it really reflects how the sector started being driven by consumer demand, and that many businesses jumped in thinking there was an opportunity to make some quick return on investment, forgetting that the patients should be at the center of businesses, especially something as personal as healthcare. So I see how CUNO Medical is succeeding with your focus on patients and expanding access to healthcare. So I'm going to ask you to gaze into your crystal ball and share with us some of your thoughts and ideas about where the international medical travel sector is going, perhaps some short-term successes that you see or looking farther into the future as to what the industry might look like in 5 or 10 years.
I'd be happy to do so. I think about this a lot, obviously. And I think, you know, when you look at the medical travel industry in the short term, I see a bright short-term future for it. What I always say is the market is always right and the patient is always right. And what we see at CUNO Medical especially is that patient demand is growing month over month. And there is this massive movement where people are starting to realize that there is more than, you know, the doctor next door, that I don't see any scenario where this is not going to happen. So I think this short-term future is a much larger, a more dynamic, a more international medical travel industry that will benefit the patients, but it will also benefit a lot of hospitals and doctors in order to be able to provide those services to an international audience. I think the long-term future, and I think that's going to, this is where we're closing the loop to one of your previous questions in terms of all the other players and stakeholders that are existing in healthcare, such as government, regulatory services, health insurance companies and all that. And I think this is going to define what the future is going to be in medical travel in terms of how big that movement is going to be. I would wish that insurance providers and governments will realize that there can be a lot of upside and benefit in solving a lot of local healthcare problems by opening up the market. What I don't mean by that is removing all the regulations. I think regulations are good if you do them in a smart way. And I would hope that this is going to happen in the future so that, you know, the thought of going abroad to find the best doctor you can have, or the thought of looking for a place for treatment or a doctor outside of what your local system is offering, is going to be such a common thing, so that access to care is not going to be as much of a problem anymore as it is today for so many people.
Well, we certainly hope your predictions for that future are spot on. I want to thank Dr. Sophie Chung for a great conversation. And please, Sophie, tell our audience how they can reach you.
Absolutely. And I love to hear from everyone who listens to that. So any feedback or anything you want to comment, please bring them up to me. You can basically reach me through all digital channels. My email address is really easy to remember. It's sophie@cunomedical.com. You find me on LinkedIn. You find me on all social media channels such as Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. So please don't be shy and don't be a stranger, and feel free to approach me in person or digitally. I would be looking forward to it.
Thank you very much, Sophie. It's been a delight talking with you. And thank you for listening to the Medical Travel Show.
And this is Irving Stackpole. You've been listening to The Medical Travel Show, a series of conversations with industry thought leaders from the world of international wellness, health, and medical travel. Be sure to look for us on Facebook and Twitter, and thanks for listening.